Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello.
Whoa.
Ooh, that's
do you want me to do the intro, co-host? You could do if you want. Go on, give it a go.
No. I'm not prepared for that this early
too
in
much
the morning.
Pressure. Well, clearly nor am I because I can't talk.
Hello, one and all, and welcome to After the Checkered Flag, our F1 special series here on the Behind the Glass podcast. I'm, of course, one of your hosts, Sam, regular host of Behind the Glass podcast, and I'm joined by your co-host for the After the Checkered Flag series, Paul from Supercars of London.
Hello.
It is early on a Monday morning. And I have to just start immediately with a confession. Not that my voice has not broken yet, as it seemed to prove a moment ago, but that I was away this weekend.
You were.
I was traveling. I have one of those annoying projects that I can't talk about yet. I have to wait.
Everything's signed under contract.
Exactly. I've signed endless sort of pieces of paper that say if I talk about it, then I'll be sued. So I'm not allowed to tell you where I was or what I was doing, but it was a big project that meant I was very far away with no phone signal.
You were far away and in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and no access to a television to watch the races. So I basically missed everything. I have, of course, caught up with all the action from Imola. I always think of it still as the San Marino Grand Prix. Is that showing my age?
Yes,
back in the
definitely.
Late 90s, early noughties. Ah, San Marino. I don't know what it's called now. Because
Emilia.
Romagna. Is that what it's called these days?
So, yeah.
Because it went through that like Grand Prix of Italy 50th celebration, yeah, Heineken. Yeah. Anyway, so it's now the Emilia Romagna Grand Prix at Imola. I caught up on all the action, watching sort of highlights on the F1 YouTube channel, which I have to say just gets better and better every year. So thank you, Formula One. And I've tried to read some tweets and some articles to kind of understand exactly what happened over the weekend, because if you opened up your phone as I did on Sunday evening to go, oh, what was the result? I looked at it and I was like, what? Like, what happened? What was this race? So I just did a post on Instagram asking for lots of you to let us know what you want us to discuss or what you think the key points were.
Excellent.
So we'll review that a little bit later. But for now, Paul.
You're asking me
yes.
to carry this section.
Not just carry this section, carry this whole episode. What happened?
Well, I saw a lot on social media during and after saying, that was a little bit boring. And I was sat there like pumped. I was full of an adrenaline. I actually rewatched the highlights. So oh I watched God. The race live.
What a keynote.
Yeah. And actually, by the time that the race had finished, forgotten what had happened. So I then waited until the evening to watch the highlights, because there are so many questions that I had during the weekend. We obviously discussed a little bit of them on WhatsApp. Tony made a very good couple of points, and I think if he wasn't feeling poorly today, we could have at least maybe FaceTimed him and got his points across. But firstly, should we talk about sprint race?
Yes, I thought that would be a good place to kick things off.
Not a sprint race.
Well, yes, our first sprint.
Yes.
Apparently, according to Formula One, they don't want us to call it a race. I mean, it is. But officially, it's just sprint. So our first sprint of the year. Now, well, look, I'm gonna jump
because
in.
They changed a lot.
Well, just the points for, right?
For this season. That is a lot, because it means that people / drivers will be putting their cars in greater risked positions to gain these points.
So there's more of an incentive to go out and actually crack on.
Because last season it kind of felt like it was there. It was a little bit of a test, but it didn't mean anything. And drivers were too scared to overtake because they were kind of happy with the majority of the time, the position they qualified in. They didn't want to put their nose in, get clipped and wipe out and then six positions back to then have an even worse start on the race on Sunday, which was where the points mattered.
You're right. I can understand. Basically, I don't like the idea of it because I'm a bit like, why? It's a bit sort of, to me, a bit sort of Formula 2, a bit sort of junior series. Now, of course, I'm sure the justification is, well, more action throughout the weekend. And I know that's why you like it. There's, you know, you've got 3 days of genuine action, Friday qualifying, which I have to say, I do enjoy
Friday qualifying.
And then you got the sprint on Saturday and then the race on Sunday. But for me, it takes a little bit of the buzz out of the race, the main Grand Prix, because qualifying set us up perfectly. We had that sort of wet session. We had a bit of a mixed up grid, a bit of sort of unpredictability with only one practice session. And if that was leading directly into the only race of the weekend, it would have been like, oh, wow. But then the sprint happened and it was like, well, clearly Red Bull have got the race pace advantage, so that's not in question. So I almost felt like, well, Sunday's a given that that's a Red Bull. And then because, you know, various other drivers were able to sort of reposition themselves, we sort of, it felt like we were going to be left with a fairly, help me with the word, when they're following each other for a long time and no one's, come on.
Processional.
Thank you. My God. I told you it's early on a Monday morning. A fairly processional race. Obviously, that didn't quite turn out to be true. And maybe that was me being harsh, because last year during sprints, actually the Grand Prix often ended up being maybe even more exciting. Mm. Can I, I'll pitch something to you.
Okay.
So if you're F1, don't get rid of the sprint. Don't do more, because they're already talking about doing more next year. Instead, where you had highlighted sprints, just do 2 day weekends.
Okay.
So it's Saturday and Sunday only. Friday, I don't know what you could do. Fun media day, or I don't know what. But track action is only on Saturday and Sunday. And you have a practice session, qualifying, and then straight into the race on Sunday. Now, I, as a spectator, enjoy the idea of that. Tell me what you think as a spectator, and then I think we already know exactly why F1 wouldn't do that, but go on.
Well, yeah, the reason why F1 wouldn't do that is because of the TV coverage.
Money.
How do they sell that as a package over, yeah, hey, we can have action on the Friday, yeah, the Saturday.
I talked myself out of that as and I the
Sunday.
It. I wouldn't be very good in Dragon's Den, would I? Guys, invest in my company that's already closed.
But I also see your argument, because I was kind of just watching those words come out of your mouth and kind of understood they're almost revealing, like the curtains are coming up of the show a little bit too early before the show,
yes,
is supposed,
well done,
to start.
Perfect summary.
You get an idea of how the cars are going to perform, and really the only way that the race is going to hold its own and be exciting in its own sort of pinnacle, what's the word?
Its own way.
Is if the weather changes.
Sure.
So that the cars behave in a different way. And in a way, that happened this weekend. What is it about Imola that always rains?
Oh my God. I mean, it's great. I mean, it's Northern Italy in, when are we? April. Yeah, so it is going to rain. And that's fantastic. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
And we kind of need it, because it's not.
We do and we don't, because the first 20 laps of the actual race, bypassing the sprint, was so exciting. And that's where I love to see, because it was really the first time that the drivers were at 100, 110%, putting their cars in the position to risk dropping back, going forward. We saw Sainz, Ricciardo and Bottas kind of have a little bit of an off, and then Schumacher did a spin, which was lovely. I mean, did you see Tsunoda going down the straight?
Nope.
Literally all four tires on the grass going into turn one.
Oh my God. Go on, Yuki.
Yeah, it was unreal.
Full missile.
That was him trying to battle with Schumacher, and then somehow Schumacher ended up losing positions. Once that 20th lap had really settled in, because it was 16 to 20 that I think the drivers started to realise, and Danny Ric being the guinea pig, going onto the mediums, once all of that hype and excitement around the pits had finished and everyone kind of settled into having tire temperature and the race stewards not introducing DRS, it was like, what now?
Because
we saw that the cars could follow. The cars could stick so close. Even with DRS, the cars couldn't overtake down the straight. And that was because off the dry line, it was too dangerous to outbrake the car that was... So the drivers were having a really difficult time positioning their car to make an overtake, because the cars down the straight weren't that fast or fast enough to make the overtake to then position themselves in a more favourable position for turn one. But because off the line it was wet, they didn't want to risk that. So we actually lost out on so much overtaking action because of the weather.
This is the thing. So Imola, you know, not famously the highest overtaking track in the world.
But we saw loads of overtakes in random parts where we wouldn't necessarily see.
And as you touched on, in the sprint, Verstappen even doing overtake for the lead. Yeah. So we saw that these rules are aiding and assisting in the drivers being able to make overtakes and follow the cars closely. But we're also getting DRS trains. And as you say, when there's a sort of a clear on and off line, you know, there's only so much that can be done. It's a narrow track as it is. It did feel like I caught the last five laps live as I landed back in the UK. And I was like, okay. Like apart from the Bottas Russell fight, it felt like, you know, maybe I hadn't missed too much. It was then when I watched the highlights, I was like, oh no, here we go. One thing I wanted to pick up on to argue with myself that you mentioned, you know, is that maybe the curtain's coming up too early on the main race. If we take Silverstone and even Monza actually last year, the sprint did lead to very exciting Sunday races. Of course, the Hamilton-Verstappen fight, you know, I think that contact that happened between them was a result of what had happened the day before, and Hamilton feeling like he sort of had to do what he had to do in terms of just, you know, leave his car in the corner. Ricciardo at Monza, you know, that victory was really a result of the sprint. Would he have been able to achieve that if it was a one race? So I see that it's just almost like too much for me. It's just like, you know, there's no main show. Like I can't really get my head into the excitement of a Saturday. I'm just a bit like, if it was three laps or something like that, I might get into it. But like, it's a bit sort of too long. And then I'm a bit like, okay, well, what does this all mean? And, do you know what I mean? I'm just, maybe I don't like change. I'm still unsettled by it.
I think you're a little bit old school.
Yeah, probably.
I think the newer generation, the newer viewer of Formula One would champion and do champion the idea of, I just love, and I know that this week in particular and this weekend was slightly different to most, but that Friday when you finished whatever it is that you're doing, filming, being out and about, and I was at Silverstone last year for the qualifying, and it just felt so atmospheric to have the sun coming down. I know it's slightly different in Imola, but like that evening Friday qualifying where you could just crack a beer open and there's an excuse to have a Friday evening of sport that we haven't had in the last decade, 15 years of motorsport that is Formula One, that then leads into the weekend that you would usually expect for Formula One, and having a little bit more of action on the Saturday leading into the Sunday build-up. You just need to get more hype for Sunday.
I need to get more hyped, and I need to make more time for myself, because I mean, you know, in my household, Grand Prix weekends are always just sort of, you know, a dark hole on humanity, because I just disappear. So now the fact that I'm like, it's a sprint. My wife is like, no. So quite a lot of talking points. I think let's dive in with the headline stuff, because we spoke in our last After Checker Flag episode, which, by the way, can we just apologize for the technical issues? A few of you
not my fault.
Literally not your fault. I don't think it was my fault, but considering I run all this technical equipment.
No. There was a technological error. The fact that you didn't spot it until post into the editing shows just how under the radar it swooped.
It was a weird corrupt file, but anyway, hopefully you still were able to enjoy it. And we did get a lot of great feedback. We always get great feedback, so thank you very much.
I'm giving a thumbs up to those that are listening.
Hopefully no issues this week. But what we touched on was Leclerc, Ferrari, Italy. And we were like, we love the guy. I love the guy. I think you're coming around to him.
Yeah.
But there is just still something inside of us that is like, we don't trust this fool. And unfortunately, it kind of all came a bit unstuck for Ferrari. And for me, this is my, like, I can't put 500 quid on him for the championship. Mm. I mean, what a swing. I mean, you know, for all of those who are like, oh, season's over. It's done. What a swing. What an amazing result by Red Bull. Absolutely nailed that weekend. Maximum points left, right, and center. Have closed it right up. So now it just feels like a super tight championship once again. Both drivers and constructors, I think Max is what, 27
points?
Helped
by the sprint, I may add.
Well, no, but there you go. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So, you know, really has spun it around so quickly. But aided by, firstly, Carlos Sainz having another shocker.
I looked at that weekend. If Ferrari were a cheese string, it was like every hour they pulled off another layer and just threw it in the bin. And it just fell away from them.
Because on the Friday, they looked like they were like a second ahead of everyone. I saw tweets, you know, as I was taking off being like, oh God, this weekend's over. Yeah. Like Ferrari. Yeah. And then it really wasn't the truth. And Sainz, so many years he's had these dodgy starts of the year, you know, unreliability, unluck, bad luck, whatever it might be. It feels like at the moment he's trying to catch Leclerc's pace. He's trying to be like, I've got to get back on it. And that's leading
he's
to
he's feeling the pressure of being in a real top team and having the pressure of collecting maximum points because he's never experienced this before. And being in a team with Leclerc as your teammate and now being given a car that is world championship worthy, or at least we think in these early stages of the season. And yes, whilst the luck hasn't necessarily been in his favour, I do feel like he is trying to not only impress, but also chase Charles and keep himself within that fight. But it's all, what is it? We need a conspiracy about people that sign contracts.
Yes, and then just go off the boil.
Completely.
I mean, there's probably not a conspiracy. No, it's no, no, no. It's like, yeah, great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm here for another two years. I'll take my foot off the pedal, pun intended.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't write him off at all. I think science is kind of a genius. And as I say, history suggests his second half of the season will be incredibly strong. The question will be is if Leclerc can continue to operate or can operate at that top level consistently, will he just be too far gone for science to sort of catch up in a championship mentality? And I think he's already forcing himself to be viewed as a kind of second driver within that team, which is unfortunate. Let's just hope it's just a bit of bad luck, a bit of inconsistency that he'll iron out, and we'll see Sainz operating like he did at the end of his McLaren years, even you know Renault and stuff like that. He's done well in recent
It shows
years.
How important qualifying is, and also now with the sprint weekends, it shows how important the right finishes in the sprint, because Sainz in qualifying crashed in Q2, was it Q2? Mm-hmm. Which obviously put him in the middle of the pack.
Was it Q2 or Q3?
I think he crashed at the end of Q2.
You have to tell me. Okay, yeah, you, I mean, you saw it.
Because he was, I think he was P3 in Q2.
Right.
Then crashed, which meant he couldn't do Q3.
Okay, fine.
But that just put him in the middle of the field to really put himself in a position. It wasn't his fault on turn one.
With Ricciardo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see that.
Which
yeah.
is unlucky because I think Australia was his fault.
But was he not starting fourth or fifth on the Sunday?
Yeah, after he'd a strong
made his,
Saturday.
He'd made
yeah.
his way up yeah. through the sprint, which is what he needed to do. And then say, hey, bad luck, but that's what we're seeing with him. You know, it is unfortunate, but it reflects poorly upon him. Mm. But how we started this conversation.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, we're talking about Carlos. We're talking about the wrong Ferrari driver. Overdriving can cause a spin.
Because, yes, if this is the first time you've tuned into After Second Flag, or at least the first time this year, we have regularly mentioned that as incredible a driver as Charles Leclerc is, when the push really comes to the shove, when it really matters, there's just always this slight thought that maybe he's going to bin it. And he proved that is the case, unfortunately. In what felt like such an unnecessary moment, the amount that he took those curbs, even Norris, Verstappen and Perez watching it after the race were like, wow, he took a lot of curb. And it's like, was it really necessary? You know, you had the potential for a P2, great, but you were a P3 anyway.
Yeah.
Why give yourself that risk? And it struck of that classic Leclerc, like, overboiled red.
It's almost as though, because Formula One drivers to race for 63 laps aren't racing at 100% all of the time. There's tire management, there's strategies, and there's pits that fit in there that Leclerc will be running or operating at, let's say, 70 to 80% most of the race. When he sees Perez where he was and needs to catch him, he'll creep it up. He'll turn it up a little bit because he wants to get into that DRS trigger zone to then enable it to have on the home straight. And that, I think, is what he was trying to get by taking as much curb as he could, trying to straighten that chicane as much as possible, took too much and spun around. I actually think Leclerc thinks his 100% is 100% when actually it's about 105%.
Yes.
And it's just too much. If he can balance and actually manage his 100%, then he'll be like Matt Verstappen.
Yeah. Well, because the thing is, you know, as I say, history shows that this is the case. Azerbaijan being a great example, Monaco many times, plenty of other races where, say, he's just overstepped the mark. And the thing is, that's sort of relatively fine if you're a driver who's right on the edge. And hey, heck, Verstappen for years was that guy until he ironed it out in 2019, was it, when he just went and demolished the world? Hamilton, of course, in his early years, you know, up until 2014, 15, he was a crasher. Schumacher, many times. you know, so the greats can do this, but the stat, which is kind of the scary one for our year ahead, is every race that Verstappen has finished this year, he's won.
He's won.
And that, I think...
However, that is only 50% of it.
But as Leclerc or Ferrari, you've got to see and think, we have to ensure that maximum damage limitation, because if that's going to be the case, we cannot afford... Where did he end up finishing? Sixth. It's just not good enough when you've lost the sprint, and then you've got Perez up there in P2 as well. So from a constructor's point of view, science is out. Like, it's just not good enough. And realistically, what he should have done is tried his best to crash Perez, but thought, okay, Red Bull are just faster this weekend. I'm gonna give it what I can, but I'm not gonna take any risks.
Bag third.
It, you know, if you can get second, great, but not to the point where he's doing what he did, where that could have been a race-ending incident. Mm. He was so lucky with the way that he hit those barriers. So, look, hopefully it'll be a bit of a wake-up call. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Maybe this is what makes him exciting. Maybe we're going to be...
I think it's a Ferrari wake-up call weekend. I
100%.
Think, because they know that if Red Bull can finish a race, they'll be up there and probably faster than them.
And have more recent history of operating with two, with championship winning cars. Let's forget Ferrari. This has been a long time coming, and the pressure is there from every single individual within that company, board members, the whole nation. And whilst Ferrari seem to have got it together, they haven't had to make championship winning decisions for a number of years. I mean, you know, even if you think of Vettel and Mercedes, that really wasn't ever that serious. Alonso and... Vettel, again, okay, yeah, there were a couple of years there, but going into final races and things like that, it's been a while. So, look, let's wait and see. But yeah, it was not a great weekend for Ferrari, a fantastic weekend from Red Bull.
Oh, faultless.
Incredible from Verstappen. World champion driving.
A drive worthy of a world champion. Is that where we're going?
There we go. We got
that. He genuinely put the laps in early doors, and he just built up his lead to about 13-14 seconds, and it was as though he stuck that car in cruise control. He just kept that distance and drove his own race.
I imagine maybe they turned everything down to 0.7. So yeah, impressive from Verstappen, worrying for those of us who maybe want somebody else to win. Because I was like, oh, if they fix these problems, that guy's walking away with this. But solid race from Perez.
Yeah.
Good to see. And I think it does feel like he has, as I say, got closer. We talked about it a bit.
A few mistakes. Oh, he opened the door for Leclerc.
Okay, so, right. Critical, but you know.
Well, I mean, if you're going to be number two to Max Verstappen,
in which part, in the sprint or in the main race?
In the main race.
Okay, so what going
in the main race? He was 4 or 5 seconds ahead of Leclerc in P2, missed his break point and went over the same chicane that Leclerc spun at, which then meant that Leclerc basically closed the gap to about 0.8.
Wow!
And then there was that real sort of, oh my god, I can't let him pass.
Sure.
Which 2 laps later meant that Leclerc spun.
Bloody hell. Wish I'd seen that. okay, so, I mean, the thing that I guess I've been itching to talk about, and Sky Sports F1 have made the biggest deal out of ever, and will continue to do so, is the fact that as I landed, I look at it, and I see George Russell, P5,
George
and I'm like, Lewis.
Yeah, where is he? He must have retired.
Genuinely.
Yeah.
And when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, he must have had an act, like there must have been a crash on lap one, or like something's gone horribly wrong here. And I texted you, and you were like, nope, that's just pace. I mean...
Not quite the full story.
It is.
So when I rewatched the highlights, now I can attack this from whichever angle you may win. Would you like me to attack it from a Lewis Hamilton diehard fan?
No, because I'll be there.
Okay. So George did run a very, very solid race. He had an amazing start, helped by Schumacher having a terrible start. Okay. So when you watch the helicopter and see the cars go off, Russell had overtaken Schumacher by the time Schumacher was in second gear. But then the two cars behind Russell also got past Schumacher. So that shows how bad of a start Schumacher. George did two cars before he got to turn one.
So it's P9 or something like that, or P8, P9 already.
And then Sainz, Ricciardo into Bottas, meant that George could swoop past all three of them. So by the exit of turn one, he had overtaken five cars. In that time, Schumacher going backwards actually meant that he was fighting with Tsunoda, with Lewis right behind him, meaning that Tsunoda was on the grass, which if you're Lewis, you're like, what is about to happen?
This looks like death.
Knowing that Schumacher is in front, they get to turn one, Schumacher spins, and Lewis just gets caught in that mess as well. Knowing that Tsunoda's on the grass, Schumacher's just spun in front of you. You've got three cars over there, so you can't go that way. He literally just got backed up.
Welcome to starting a race in P13, Lewis.
Exactly. Which is what I was saying. You cannot qualify but in the middle of the pack, because you'll end up with rookies, inexperienced drivers, where you don't know what to expect. If he was up in P5, P6, knowing that Perez,
he knows their tactics and how
he knows that he can stick his car there and he's not going to bounce a wheel off a body panel. So that was a mistake. But then one of Lewis's mistakes in the race, he actually said to Mercedes that it was too early to go on to intermediates, which meant he stayed out for another lap. Yeah. But by the time he came back round, everyone had started to funnel into the pit. So then when he came into the pits, it was a slow stop. He got screwed over by Ocon and Stroll, and then Gasly overtook him as well. So he lost out on a few positions there, whereas George had already been into the pits and kind of was on driver number one strategy. We've got to focus on him. So,
well, of course, because the guy's nailed top five finishes in the first five. Or
Mr. You know, Consistent.
I mean, genuinely, in a car that we all know is not even probably the third fastest now that McLaren have got up and running. Alpine are sort of there or thereabouts. You've got to look at Bottas and what he's doing. You know, where are Mercedes in the pecking order? We don't really know. On race pace, it seems to suggest they're third or fourth of the midfield. You know,
yeah, I was going to say, sort of like towards the front of the midfield.
But that's all well and good. If you're qualifying outside the top 10, you're just making your life incredibly hard. And okay, fine. So if there weren't the incidents, Russell was maybe looking at a seventh or an eighth, best. I mean, the thing is, though, the guy was there to take advantage of the opportunity, did so, and managed to keep his pace at a level that he was then there to pick up the points when Leclerc went backwards. So, you know, we said at the end of last year, you know, I'm not a massive Russell fan. I find it hard to support him, you know, to be enamored by him or whatever it is.
Out of the car.
Yeah.
In interviews, you don't really get an idea of his personality.
And at the end of the day, if you're following a sport, if you're a fan, you're always going to have your favourites and your least favourites. But we've always been able to admire what he's been able to achieve. And I think we both said it and agreed on it that this is what he had to do. This is what he needed to do when he got into Mercedes. The anticipation has been so high that if this was the other way round, I think we'd all be being like, oh, well, how disappointing that this young kid that we all thought was going to be mega and everyone's touted as being the next Hamilton has come in and has been demolished by a 40-year-old guy. Like, so I'm not surprised. I'm impressed. I'm not necessarily like, whoa. I think even Rosberg, like, I love some of the Rosberg anecdotes. It's amazing. Was like, you know, I haven't seen enough to be like, wow.
Yeah,
but he's just doing a really good job, which is made to look better by Hamilton's disastrous yo-yoing. Mm. You know, at the start of the year, Australia. And
I think in the Australian podcast, we were kind of coming out and being like, the GOAT. He's there to collect the points when a Verstappen retires. He's there. That's his consistency. That's why he's seven-time world champion.
He was just unlucky with a safety car. He would have been on the podium. Like, oh my God.
And now you could flip. If George and Lewis literally flipped and Lewis was the one consistently collecting the points and George was kind of up there at P6, but then actually back there at P14, you'd be like, yeah, you can kind of see that. But Lewis, what a God. And actually, you're now kind of going, does he want to be driver? Does he want to be racing?
Well, this is the question, right? You know, anyone who's watched Formula One for longer than Drive to Survive, ooh, a bit of shade, will know that, you know, this isn't as straightforward and as simple as the results suggest. So we're four Grand Prix in.
Yes.
Plus the sprint.
Yeah.
And, you know, for two of them, Hamilton and Russell have been very evenly matched. And really, either of them could have been in other positions. You know, safety cars, I say, in Australia, maybe disadvantaged Hamilton a little bit. But then also things in Bahrain maybe aided Hamilton a little bit. So the two races, the Saudi Grand Prix and Imola, are the ones that have really shown up that Hamilton is not bonding with this car. Mm. Russell has come in, has kept his head down, and is seemingly able to extract what that car can do in a race. I did see some funny comments, which I forwarded you, from the press conference where Norris and Verstappen were joking. I think Verstappen or somebody asked Norris, you know, do you think you're the third fastest car on the grid now? And he said, well, if I was George Russell, I'd be saying I'm in the seventh or the eighth fastest car. And Verstappen was like, oh yeah, you know, it's all about the driver. So I think they were sort of taking the piss out of him slightly, because George has been very vocal and saying, look, the car's not that good, but here I am just nailing top five finishes. But yeah, but that's what he needs, and that's what Lewis needs to be doing. And I think it's the fact that he's just adapted, or he's understood that car, or it's incapabilities a little better. Mm. And maybe it's just the fact, and we have seen it before with Vettel in Red Bull. I'm trying to think of some other drivers where rule changes or moments have moved where I think Hamilton's just not gelled with that car yet, you know.
He's not tuned into it.
And there'll be a part of it, which is the guy has been used to being wholly at one with his Formula One car, turning up every single race weekend and just being completely connected.
Literally
with it.
Being able to drive it with two yes. fingers.
Whatever he wants
exactly
to do, it
what's going to happen.
And being at the front, you know, fighting with...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You know, other top drivers, four race wins and a different mentality. And no matter what you say, no matter how great you are, that change of now there's a car that I don't quite understand, I haven't quite figured out yet, and I'm battling in the midfield and out of points, your psyche is always going to be a little bit juiced. So I am defending him a bit, but I'm also like, boy, is it, it's surprising. Mm. It's not what I think any Hamilton fan wanted to see. I don't think it discredits him. I'm going to say that, you know, Twitter and the Drive to Survive audience, shade again, love to jump on going, oh yeah, see, look, put him in a crap car. He's average. Russell's dominating and blah, blah. I don't feel that way, but I do feel surprised at how much he's struggling with this car. We're four races in, long season ahead, plenty of time for him to hopefully figure that out. But maybe we said that about Ricciardo and McLaren, and that love story hasn't really sussed itself out. Vettel and his 2014 year with Ricciardo, we were like, oh, what's going on here? Ricciardo's really got the upper hand. Oh, don't worry, Vettel will figure it out. He didn't really ever do so. So maybe this is it. Maybe this formula of car won't suit Hamilton. Maybe he's not going to gel with it. At which point, we have to ask the question that every news outlet is, because it's clickbait, hence why we used it. It's the title of this video. What does Hamilton do now? Like, what is it? Does he retire? Does he start thinking about changing team? What's his motivation level? Does he throw in that? Like,
ask me those questions individually. Okay. How shall I answer them?
This is exactly why you're here, Paul. So, I think we would both agree. So, I'm going to take this one off the table.
Okay.
Hamilton's not the kind of guy that's just literally going to be like, throwing in the towel, even though he's done that with the championship already.
Yeah, I'm out of the race.
So where do you think his motivation levels are at the moment?
This is the question that I want to answer, because I think you can see his disheartened nature in the interviews. He definitely doesn't want to be interviewing. He would rather be doing everything in his power to be figuring that car out rather than having to speak to people that then gets cut up and thrown across YouTube and TikTok and his words get spun and all of a sudden there's the title, he's retiring. I definitely don't know. He needs to dig really deep to find some sort of motivation, because I felt as I was watching the race, him going round and round and round, even with DRS. We know that Gasly had DRS, and even Gasly couldn't even catch the Albon in the Williams.
Unbelievable, right? I mean, Albon is just, what a hero. Yeah.
And I saw Gasly's post-race interview, and he was like, there was nothing that we could do. Like, we had DRS, and we still couldn't catch the Williams down the straight. So then you've got Lewis behind Gasly in P12, P13, P14. Every now and again, trying to make a move, trying to see whether he can lunge. I actually think he got to the point where it's like, what is the point? Mm-hmm. I'm lunging mm-hmm. and potentially like putting my car at risk for P12. And at that point, I might as well just sit here and run the race, be really quiet. And you kind of then feel like he's in his car questioning what the hell he's doing there.
Well, you know, we've seen it years, even in the big success years. Hamilton on the radio can be a sulker, you know, can be a moaner, can be a sulker, and can all too easily seem to be weighed down when things haven't necessarily gone his way. You know, oh guys, why did you put me in this situation?
Yeah.
Oh, we shouldn't be on this tire, and there's nothing I can do. And often it's Bono or the team having to be like, come on, Lewis, you can do this. Mm. And we've talked about, you know, when he does get in that mindset, he's fairly unbeatable in a quick car. but at the same time, when he gets down on himself, it does seem that he does spiral a bit. Yeah. And I think you're right. From what I saw on the highlights, he was a bit like, oh, I can't drive this car. I'm in a DRS train. We didn't get on the right tires. Like, I'm just not moving.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I like to think as a Hamilton fan that his mental strength is bigger than that, that there's a way that this will be turned around. And I say, it doesn't make me knock the guy at all. Like, I've followed him since 2006. So I believe in the talent, but it's just clear that he's not gelling with this car. And I'm trying to bring up now, so I was rudely tapping away as you were talking there, because I'm trying to bring up some stats to have a look at and to sort of, you know, consider previous drivers. So one that I was looking at there was the 2005 season when Ferrari had a bit of an upset, you know, rule changes and Ferrari fell off the pace. Schumacher and Massa were more evenly matched because it was Massa's first year.
Yeah.
Ferrari, but they weren't. I mean, Schumacher still finished third in the championship, and realistically, Massa was three or four places behind Schumacher for most of the year. But what I'm now going to look like is at Hamilton's first year at Mercedes, because obviously I remember when he joined Mercedes, there was a bit of a time where he was struggling with the brakes. Famously at McLaren, he was a late breaker. I think it was a change in either a brake supplier or something to the pads. And there was this big thing, oh, Hamilton's not as confident on the brakes, but I'm looking again now. So start the 2013 season. We've got a fifth, a third, a third, a fifth in the first four races for Hamilton in a Mercedes. Whereas Rosberg did a retirement, a fourth, a retirement, a ninth. So, you know, he's having a shocker. By Hamilton standards, having a shocker against his teammate, against rule change differences. Maybe there's a Vettel-Ricciardo comparison I can make. But anyway, he's having a shocker.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to wait and see, because, you know, last week we were there going, Vettel, is he ever going to turn up to Imola? And there he is, having an amazing weekend, coming home
loving
eight.
Loving it.
Absolutely bossing it. So we're idiots.
Yeah.
And as we say regularly, we don't know what we're talking about. So we're definitely not going to cast any illusions that, you know, Hamilton's going to retire. But it doesn't look great from
the
outside.
It did find me watching the Grand Prix thinking, can you really change teams halfway through and continue on collecting points?
Yeah, I think you probably can as a driver. Yeah.
But,
I don't see him going to Red Bull or Ferrari anytime soon. It's just one of those things that it's a tough pill to swallow, but I think this is a thing of following sport and supporting people within sport, whatever it is, golf, tennis, football, rugby, American football, everyone has their peaks and troughs. Mm. And so...
If you're a Manchester United fan out there.
I don't get that reference, but yes. as I say, as a fan, tough to watch, tough to swallow at the moment, frustrating. I expect him to pull through, and I think we have to applaud Russell, even though, yeah, it doesn't make me a Russell
fan. He's doing the job.
Yeah, but he's doing a fantastic job, yeah. As is Lando Norris, you know. Yeah. And I think the McLaren situation really must give Mercedes hope.
Mm.
You know, and there's still lots of rumours, you know, rumours are rife at the moment. You know, Mercedes are going to bring a B-spec car to Spain. They're going to completely redesign the thing. There's tons of different updates. Maybe they're writing the whole car off, whatever it might be. But how McLaren have been able to rescue that so quickly, when you think of their pre-season testing, Spain, first off, they were so quick. Mm. Then it all went wrong. Bahrain Grand Prix disaster, and they've reeled it back. And there was Norris.
Yeah,
great race weekend, off the back of Australia where they had some pace as well. Ricciardo, without that accident, probably was going to be there or thereabouts too. And Norris, I think, just continues to wave a bit of a flag of, I'm pretty good.
I'm here.
Yeah,
I am here, guys.
I'm not too bad.
Everyone's talking about Leclerc versus Verstappen. And yes, okay, the McLaren definitely isn't as competitive as the Red Bull and Ferrari, but we cannot discount Norris's ability. And he drove the race that Leclerc should have driven.
Yes.
100%.
Well said, yeah.
Because he was there. And when you actually watched his post-race interviews, he said, we knew that we weren't going to be catching those cars in front. And we knew that there were cars behind that were kind of matching our pace. And all we needed to do was maintain that gap. And I think he was happy with being P4.
Yeah, it was exactly that, which is where Leclerc should have gone, right, I'm not quick enough this weekend, so...
I'll take where I am.
Exactly.
But as a competitive racing driver, that is not as easier said than done.
Well said. So let me have a quick look on Instagram, see what some people were mentioning. Straight away, SW Auto Works. What is going on with Hamilton? Well, we've just been talking about that. Paul Van Rouge. Will Hamilton retire before the end of the season? Is there some motivation left?
We've literally just answered this question.
Yeah, literally. And then, you know, this was all of last year, but Matty Davey, 1997. Will Goss. What does Danny Rick's future look like? Is Danny Rick past it? I mean, look, unfortunate incident. It was in the rain. I think, you know, last race and here at Imola, he was looking quick. Mm. He was looking on Norris's pace. So I don't think it's as disastrous as it might appear. But I have to say, as a spectator, I think Ricciardo's moment may have passed.
Yeah.
I think Norris is on the ascendancy. And I think it's going to be hard for Ricciardo to get on top of that and be the dominant driver in that team. Will he consistently perform better? I think so. It's still early days, guys. You know, if you look at his results this year, he seems to be more on Norris's pace. But I don't know. Do you think this is the end of Ricciardo? You think he's going to retire at the end of the year?
I would be amazed if he does.
Yeah,
so. We're four races into such a long season, and there's so much more potential to see from that McLaren. And I think he has still got the grit between his teeth, knowing that Lando is this halo child underneath Zak Brown. I think he'll have the grit between his teeth to prove, hey, look, I'm here as well. In the same way Carlos will have that battle with the clerk, they will get on. It's the hardest thing to go off the grid and for them to all to hang out and share a private jet back to Monaco.
Busy mates.
And then to actually get and compete on track. And I think the experience that Danny Rick has and the amount of races that there are, I think it is going to be a long journey ahead, which is why I still have hope for Lewis and I still have hope for the Mercedes. I think Danny Rick has the potential to produce race wins.
Well, as we saw last year, out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So he's still there. Yeah, I agree with you there. V1CCHAN. Vichan, I'm going to go for. Bottas's fight with Russell, of course, epic. Last few laps of the race, absolutely epic. Bottas continuing to prove what a talent he is, was.
Absolutely. And I know we gave him a hard time last season.
Oh, such a hard time. But he underperformed. Yeah, I mean, he underperformed.
Exactly.
Now the shackles have been cut.
Yeah. He's racing without pressure. He's got nothing to lose. And I think it's probably worth saying, he had an 11 or 12 second pit stop.
Okay.
Like to be catching George right at the end of the race with an average of 29 seconds in the pit lane, he was stationary for 12 of those for 12 seconds.
Wow!
So okay. He lost a hell of a lot of time and had a little bit of bad luck, and still
drove in the first lap,
which actually didn't cause any damage to his car, but still a phenomenal drive and so good to see him. He's as you say, like literally driving without the shackles.
And I think, but again, also gives a big thumbs up to Russell, who in a car that we know is not that easy to drive. He's been complaining about the porpoising. Held off Bottas, who looked super aggressive. And I think Russell demonstrated that maybe he's got a great understanding of how to deploy that Mercedes powertrain and things like that.
Yeah.
Because he was always just there or there.
There was one mistake. I think George went for a move against K-Mag, which brought Bottas into the picture.
Okay.
And messed up. He messed up, but then got him later on that lap. But then Bottas was straight past Kevin Magnussen as well. So it was almost like, I'm hunting you down. And I think if the race was another five laps, the Alpha probably would have got the Merc.
Fair. So some people asking about, you know, was Hamilton's car different to George's? I mean, I say we talked a lot about Hamilton.
I don't think so. I just, having analysed that first lap and looking at how George came into the pits first, I think if Lewis had called, which shows the misunderstanding, Lewis knew that car inside and out. He knew exactly when his tyres were going to turn off. He knew exactly when to call a pit stop. He was almost calling them over his team that had all of the computer and data in front of him to make such a poor judgment of saying, no, we're not there yet.
Lack of confidence in the car.
Yeah. So if he had called that, he would have come in before George. He would have come in as probably the second or the third car into the pits. I think it was those cars that were coming in. He might have even gained two positions and been up there in the points. And then all of a sudden he's like, right, I've got a race on my hands.
Is there a chance that Hamilton is trying to set up this car or deal with its issues with his experience with the old, very successful Mercedes of the last 5-6 years, where Russell's coming in with such a fresh slate. He's just dealing with the issues as they come. And maybe what we've seen in Saudi and now we've seen here is Hamilton himself or his side of the garage is setting up that car badly. And Toto's apology, because Toto's very public apology made it out as though Hamilton's car was undrivable.
Yeah.
You know, as everyone's pointing out, Russell was able to score points and has been scoring points. Was that suggesting that they just keep getting it wrong with Hamilton's car because Hamilton's trying too hard or using the wrong, or is it just, this is our world champion, we're not giving him a car that's worthy of him and that's what we're apologising for? It's hard to know, but it was a bit of a weird comment from Toto, because when Russell is doing so well, but also Toto can't turn around and be like, Lewis, that was a crap drive, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
You're useless. Sort it out. Yeah. So yeah, a bit of a tough one to answer, I think. More people talking about, you know, the Schmidty, the flop of Hamilton. Harsh.
I think that's generally the culture that we have online, the moment someone falls off, whether it's a dip, you cannot operate at an elite level without peaks and troughs.
Yeah, yeah. And in a sport where you are reliant on your car.
Yeah.
You know, like we've spoken about this so many times before, you know, and when Max Chilton came on, we asked the question, and I can't remember his exact percentage, but it was something as high as 75, 80, maybe even 90% is down to car performance, as we're seeing. And it's also about how the driver gels with that car. And there's that amazing, I always reference it, the Kobayashi interview on Beyond the Grid. You know, super rogue, Kobayashi, not the world's most famous Formula One driver, but gave him incredible insight and talked about how important it is for the driver to gel with the car. And that's what we're seeing with Norris at McLaren at the moment. That's what we've seen with Verstappen and Red Bull. That's what we've seen at Hamilton and Mercedes and Vettel with the blown diffuser era. When a driver is fully confident with not only a competitive car, that's when they demolish their teammate.
Yeah.
That's when they're able to extract every extra tenth. And that's when they're able to gain 2 or 3 tenths beyond what the car is.
Max and Red Bull.
Yeah, exactly right. And so Hamilton now, as we're seeing, is in a car which, okay, maybe can be scoring fifth or sixth positions, maybe even fourth. And hey, he did get a podium, let's not forget, the start of the year. But he's not gelled with it. And so he's not able to extract the maximum from it. But hopefully that will come. Whether the sprint race adds anything to the weekend, we have also discussed. Julian Fry with the DRS delay. So you said, do you think it's because it wasn't dry? They felt it wasn't dry enough.
It was a comment that was sort of throughout the first half of the race with Crofty and Paul DiResta. They were basically saying, like, what's going on? Because we've got an obvious dry line. We're now actually shifting onto intermediate tyres. Why are they not activating the DRS? Because we're at a point where the cars can follow so closely, but they're not being given that additional speed advantage down the straight. But then I suppose they knew before than just the average viewer that they would get to the end of the straight and one of them would be offline.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
So we saw that when they did activate DRS, it didn't make any difference whatsoever because drivers weren't prepared to put their car in the position where they had no idea what was going to happen when they stamp on the brakes at 200 miles an hour.
Well, and also just racing side by side, as we saw with Russell and Bottas last year. That was a big smash because of just that. P. Holtz, TV hosting. At the sprint, they show just beep and not the interesting battles. Yeah, we've spoken a lot about the direction. Yeah. I think they're getting better, but...
There was still a lot of Lewis coverage. But then again, everyone was complaining about Tiger Woods' coverage at the Masters.
Gotta love Tiger. Rosberg sitting in his house. Yeah, I did hear about this.
Yeah, some constant crying to Rosberg sitting. And there was a funny moment where the connection wasn't there, so they like threw it over to Rosberg, and he was just there, like staring out of the camera, like almost over the camera, and not saying anything. Then they're like, "We'll come back to you, Nico." And it was like, he had no idea that you'd even gone to him.
A lot of these other comments, I have to say, are things that we have touched on.
Can we talk about Schumacher?
Please, I'm assuming Mick, not Michael, but I'll happily engage.
Purely, it felt like he was out of his depth this weekend. And it was a worrying performance from him. Multiple mistakes. I think at one point he got black and white flag. He had a couple of spins. And again, Kevin Magnussen showing what that car is capable of doing. And I know he's coming in really like with a I've got nothing to lose attitude. But I don't know, like I kind of felt like Latifi was an also runner. Amazing that he didn't crash, like considering the conditions.
I mean, didn't he crash on his outlap on qualifying or practice or something like that?
Yes, yeah.
Or spun at least.
But it felt like as I was re-watching the start, like he had a shocking start. He then spun on turn one. He had a moment over the final chicane. I don't know what the name is. And I just kind of was watching it going, maybe.
Well, it's not the first time we've thought it.
It's not, but I know that we've highlighted a couple of times this year, and this year in particular, because the Haas is decent. Like 100%. It's not like, oh, they're 10 seconds behind Williams and everyone else.
Competitive car.
And actually putting Kevin Magnussen in actually shows what a good job a proper driver could do, like a proper Formula One driver. And I know there was always questions about Mick Schumacher in, he wasn't dominant in his F2, even though he won the world championship, to move into Formula One. And where does he go from here? And we're always going, just get the laps in, just finish the race, you know, just
no,
just
no, but build this is the experience. Year he has to deliver. This is the year he has to deliver, and he's not performing well. You know, if he didn't have that name and we didn't all have hope and that expectations, we'd all be sitting here like we do with Latifi week in, week out, going, disaster.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm starting to feel. I had the hope and the promise of last year, okay, you know, crap car to drive. You know, Imola was also a shocker for him last year. I don't remember. Did he spend coming out of the pits?
Yeah.
So, you know, last year we gave him every excuse that we could or should, and I think the whole F1 community did. But now you're right, he's got the opportunity where firstly he should at least be on Kevin's pace, if not outpacing him. He's younger, he's theoretically more driven, he's at the start of his career, he's also been racing more regularly in Formula One. Recently. So he should be there or thereabouts, and he should have ironed out a lot of those mistakes. But we're not seeing that. We're seeing regular mistakes, we're not seeing the performance, we're not seeing the pace, and it doesn't look good for him. Now, you know, we gotta hope, as I say, all of this stuff, we've got such a long year ahead of us. And, you know, we had some quirky tracks. You know, we've been looking at strange races.
Well, let's look at the next race.
Yeah. Okay. Around a car park in Miami. You know, that is just Formula One these days, I suppose. I still sort of keep waiting for the traditional European circuits, but we just had one and no one could overtake. So I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm worried for Mick's reputation as we move forward. And we just have to wait and see, but
if you get the opportunity, because I actually rewatched it and rewatched it again, if you get the opportunity to see the helicopter angle of all of the cars going off, it's it's a crazy start.
No, but people drop their starts. They're like,
I know, a damn start.
I feel like you're giving him too hard a time for fluffing his start. Like, there's definitely like top drivers who fluff their starts regularly.
Yeah. Well, Max did in the sprint.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's more.
I think it was evidence. It was highlighted because I was obviously fixated on where the Mercs were.
Sure.
It kind of like brought my attention towards Schumacher to therefore keep watching what he was doing during the race, especially, I know K-Mag went back, but fundamentally still ended up in the points and ran a decent race in a Haas.
A P9, so yeah. You know, what a ledge. Anyway, it was one of those things, you know, I didn't really watch it, but one of those races, which was a big swing in the championship. And whilst it may not have necessarily been a classic up front, it was a very interesting Grand Prix with a lot of interesting talking points, as we've just discussed, and to say a big swing in the championship, which sets us up for some even more exciting races ahead. So going into Miami, I think it's going to be very interesting to see the Red Bull versus Ferrari pace, because it did seem like Red Bull took a big step this weekend. They weren't just...
Should we drop in Tony's note from this weekend? Which was, even with these regulation changes, which... the idea of bringing cars together still has brought two cars so far ahead of everyone else. Like what we've had for such long times in Formula One, even though the regulations have changed, we've still got two teams and everyone else is like the best of the rest.
Yes. As with most things that Tony says, this annoyed me over the weekend. Because... welcome to Formula One. Like, do you know, like, welcome to Formula One. I mean, rules have changed too many times than I can remember in the relatively short period that I've been watching it since the 90s. Like, rules change. The way this sport works is traditionally one, two, at best, if you dream all your hopes and dreams in the world, three teams can fight for a championship. But I will barely be able to count those seasons on my hands, like, from memories forever. It's, as I say, usually two.
Yeah.
And if not, it's dominance. It's Ferrari dominance. Yeah. It's Red Bull dominance. It's Mercedes dominance. And let's see where we're about to go. But even, you know, the Braun year, fairly Braun, and then Red Bull caught up, but it was still just Red Bull and Braun. Yeah. You know, the Schumacher era, I mean, he had challenges from McLaren one year and then Williams a bit, but they were never really fighting. And Schumacher versus Hakkinen was just McLaren and Ferrari. Like, that is the sport we're in. And yes, they made these rule changes in an attempt to bring the field closer. And I think what we have seen, even last year, is that whilst Formula One will continue to show the best of the best and development in Ferrari, and the big teams will always be the big teams, that midfield pack continues to be more and more exciting.
Yeah.
And actually last year, when it was Verstappen, Hamilton, the midfield was so much fun, you know, and the unpredictability we got of Ocon winning a race, the year before that, Gasly winning a race, the Ricciardo victory, that is there because the midfield is so competitive that when the top few teams don't finish, that's where we've got excitement. And, you know, Tony is a little bit of a Drive to Survive F1 fan. You know,
you'd be so annoyed at the WhatsApps that he sent me. About 10 minutes towards the end of the race, he switched Formula One on. And he was like, what's going on here? Why is Lewis in P14? And I said, oh, you know, like he's not really ran the best race. Yeah. And he was like, oh, okay. And then that was it. And then 5 minutes later, I sent him another message because that was when Leclerc spun. And he went, nah, I switched it off. It was boring.
Yeah.
Just like F1 was before. That's why I never watched it.
This is what I mean. I mean, I will tell him to his face a million times. He's a glory supporter, Tony, in most sports.
Apart from the fact that he supports Tottenham.
Which is a football reference that I don't get, but most of the other time, I just like greatness. I like greatness. Well, because apparently Lewis isn't great anymore. I don't care about it anymore. And so, yeah, he, you know, he admittedly has come to the sport relatively recently and he's quick to sort of dismiss it. And yeah, I think his whole, but you know, they've changed nothing. It's crap because his goat is no longer winning. He's not that interested. But yeah, for me, this is just Formula One. And I think there is excitement. I think there's lots of promise. And, you know, I think McLaren are there or thereabouts. I think we will have some upsets this year. I think the fact that Perez and Verstappen are now seemingly at a closer battle, I think Sainz will come on strong. You know, I still see lots of hope. And I think the rule changes have been interesting.
I think more positive than...
Yeah.
There's so much more that's come out that's made the racing that we've watched so far exciting.
First three, and look, let's not knock Imola, but these first four races have continued at a level-ish of last year's best season of all time.
We've got to take ourselves, if we're going to compare the start of this season, we've got to take ourselves back and compare the start of last season. Like, we can't compare the last four races of the championship from Brazil onwards to the start, because it doesn't mean as much at the moment. It's just a points collection.
I think it's been as good. I think it's been as exciting. I mean, I've been on the edge of my seat for most of the races, heart pumping. Well, this one I didn't watch. Like, really loving the action.
You're in some plane with your heart pumping on the edge of your seat for a different reason.
Sketchy flights I took. There are so many recent years and past seasons where I could easily remember being bored to hell at the start of the year, processional races.
Well, I know that the messages that I saw, the tweets that I saw from people saying this race was boring, and I was watching it like, no, what are you talking about? There was so much action, so many good things that were happening, and the fact that they changed from intermediates to mediums. I do think there are people out there that are getting caught up on the excitement of the end of last and thinking it's going to transfer to the beginning of a new season, which is never the case.
And Drive to Survive.
Yeah.
You know, it sets up this kind of great drama, this great intrigue, and we're looking at new storylines now. Yeah. It's hard to understand. It's hard to see those. And yes, Tony, I am calling you out in the sense where he just looks at it and goes, all right, well, Russell's better than Hamilton. Hamilton's crap. Who cares about Verstappen and Leclerc? It's boring. No one's doing it. Because he just wants to see Hamilton come through and demolish everything. And he doesn't understand why Lewis can't go from P13 to P1, where in Brazil he went from P20 to, like, he just doesn't get it. So, but that's fine. You know, we'll try and coach him along the way. Next race is going to be very interesting. Miami on this kind of purpose-built circuit, which I don't know why I'm not that excited by, because I'm not a huge fan of new city circuits, but
blank canvas. And these new circuits enable the engineering of action.
Maybe you're right. You know what? And I like,
look, Imola, Monaco. Let's talk about some of the older circuits that have existed for such a long time, and the way that cars have grown and expanded.
Don't see them anymore.
Yeah,
you're right. So maybe Miami's going to be an absolute classic. I bloody hope so.
Don't bank on it.
Yeah, don't quote Paul on that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you'll join us once again in a few weeks' time, post the Miami Grand Prix. If you want to share any of your thoughts before that or during the race, use the hashtag behind the glass, and you can tag either Paul or I on any social media platform. We'll try to include some of your comments or your thoughts in these episodes. If you've enjoyed this, you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe, turn on notifications. I usually say, don't worry, our usual episodes with Tony are coming later this week. I think he's got COVID. He's like, oh, I'm really, really sick. I didn't sleep that well. I'm like, have you got COVID? He's like, oh, I don't know. So he's a bit of a COVID naysayer.
He's definitely currently nursing a football injury as well. So he's probably holed up in bed somewhere feeling quite sorry for himself.
Feeling old. I hope later this week there'll be a regular episode with Tony, but let's watch this space. But no matter what, we will be back with you in the future. So yeah, turn on those notifications. Keep following on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you might listen to this podcast. If you want to follow Paul, he's at WallacePJW on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms, and we'll be back with you post the Miami Grand Prix.
Which is definitely going to be a Sunday evening race, isn't it, for us?
Oh, sick!
Yes, it's all!
Bye-bye!
Bye!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.